You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
You know, what's amazing about financial independence is that it is eminently replicable. This is something that you can take these levers, you can take action, implement in your life, and you will see similar results to the people that have come on this show in a relatively short period of time. But what we have found with our community is that people that have beaten the game still are struggling with fear. They're struggling with this idea, this concept of one more year, and this idea of enough. So today on the show, we thought that we could try to circle back to this idea and bring on Doc G from Diversify to help us explore this, because this is something that he is struggling with in his personal life. He's completely broken the game, does not need to work anymore from a W-2 perspective, but still has these lingering doubts and has been documenting it for years on his blog. I think this is going to be a fascinating and incredibly valuable conversation. And to help me with this, I have my co-host Brad here with me today. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Jonathan, I am doing quite well. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this conversation with Doc G. As you said, he has reached financial independence. He's broken the game in your term. And that's not the end of the story, though. You don't just ride off into the sunset. You need to figure out the psychological part of this. And I think that's what he describes so eloquently on his blog. And he's a prolific commenter on our Choose FI Facebook group and just adding a ton of value. I'm just so curious to really dive into what he's thought about FI and the entire FI journey. So with that, Doc G, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here on the podcast.
So Doc G, just to kind of set this up, we were talking with Carl, Mr. 1500, the other day, and he was raving, absolutely raving about this talk that you gave at Camp FI, I believe it was Midwest, that basically had a standing ovation. I kind of added that part. He didn't actually explicitly state that, but he did say it was a TED Talk worthy event. And your background in medicine really has brought a level of empathy that comes through in your writing. And, you know, I think today we're really excited to explore this in the context of what next, but it sounds like your background in medicine has kind of left you with a little bit of conflict about, even after you've reached financial independence, that purpose, that meaning. I'd love to hear you comment on that.
Yeah, so I came to medicine fairly directly. My father was a physician, and when I was 8 years old, my father actually died unexpectedly. And when he died, I was at that age where I wanted to be exactly like him. So I kind of carried this with me, this idea of becoming a doctor, this idea of walking in his footsteps and carrying out the patient care that he couldn't do really stuck with me. And it really became my purpose in life. So when I became a physician, I was really in some ways living my best life. Now, as you guys know, healthcare has changed and being a doctor has changed. And what we're finding is that there's a lot of burnout. Physicians are finding it harder and harder to practice medicine and spend more and more time filling out paperwork and working on computers. So as I was getting farther in my career, I started realizing that what I had thought was my purpose, being a physician, was no longer making me happy. Right at that time is when I discovered the financial independence community. And so it left me with a huge amount of conflict because on one side, I realized I have enough money. I can stop working. I can do whatever I want. I can write. I can blog. But the other part of me had this connection to my father who died when I was 8 and this sense of purpose in life about this was what I was meant to do. So it really did create quite a bit of conflict.
I'm curious how you found the FI community and if it was related to this sense of conflict that you found in your job.
Believe it or not, the FI community found me. So back in 2014, I was in my office seeing patients and I got a phone call. And my secretary said, "Hey, Doc, there's this guy named Jim Daly on the phone and he wanted to talk to you about his book." Now, I had never heard of Jim Daly, and as you guys know, he's the creator of The White Coat Investor, and he had written this book called The White Coat Investor. And at that time, I was actually writing a medical blog. I had been doing medical blogging since 2005, and it was moderately successful. And so he had read my blog, and he wanted me to review his book. So I said, sure, send me a copy. I mean, I thought I was getting away with something great, right? Someone was sending me a free copy of their book. I get his book, and I read through it, and I literally read through it in 2 hours. I sat down and read every single page. And I realized, you know, I've been really lucky. I had financially intelligent parents. They had modeled really great behavior for me. So maybe 70% of what Jim was suggesting in his book, I already did. But what he gave me was the vocabulary to understand financial independence. So as I was getting more and more tired of medicine, I started thinking, I wonder if I can retire. I wonder if I can slow down. But the normal people we go to get those answers, like our accountants or our financial advisors, which I had one at the time, they weren't really able to give me satisfactory answers. It was only after I delved into Jim's writing and, you know, after I read his book, I went to his website and just read and read and read. And over the years, that led me to finding Mr. Money Mustache and Carl and Physician on Fire and Retire by 40. I mean, you can go down all the list of these wonderful, wonderful bloggers. And they gave me the vocabulary and the understanding of not only what financial independence is, but how to invest and how to plan for the future. So I like to say financial independence found me. I didn't find it.
What changed for you mentally when you read that book? Did something change overnight, or was this a gradual learning process?
I think the majority of the change happened literally immediately, because immediately I saw a path forward. And that's the thing about personal finance, why it's such a black box for most people, is we just don't understand enough to organize it in our brains. And because we lack this organization, we lack this framework, we give up on it before we learn enough to start building a future. So for me, he gave me a framework. And once that framework was in place, I had a place to go, like these blogs and these books, to then build around that framework and form structure. So there was an immediate change in my brain. The actual life changes took a bunch more years. It took a bunch more reading and thinking and tying my feelings about being a physician to also my feelings about looking for deeper purpose and meaning in other parts of my life.
So I assume that as a doctor, your identity is strongly linked with your profession and that purpose, right? Or how people see it. But I guess you're describing this search for purpose and this search for meaning. And I'm curious, like, the interplay between your profession as a physician and your current life, and I guess your future financially independent life. Like, how does this all tie together with that purpose at its center?
I have a saying which is very similar to something you guys have said in a number of episodes. I like to say we tell ourselves the stories about our lives that make it bearable, or better yet, magical, mystical. So when my father died, the story I told myself about my life was his dying pushed me to become a physician. And this gave me a strong sense of purpose. This gave me a strong sense of meaning and identity. But I'll tell you, as I started practicing being a physician, just like anything else, I realized that there were some real downsides. Physicians are burning out. This is a difficult field. And not only are physicians burning out, but policy is changing. So all of a sudden, the story I have to tell myself about my past is changing right in front of my eyes, because this identity, this purpose, didn't bring me to ultimate happiness. And that's where financial independence came into the game. I had my story about being a physician. I had my story about finding that being a physician was no longer the joy that it started being. And now I had a new journey to set off on.
I want to talk about fear for a second. And in particular, I want to start with like a number, a really, really big number, $10 million. What does that mean for you?
When I first started thinking about leaving medicine, before I had the vocabulary, before I read Jim Daly's book, $10 million was what I was told by my accountant that I probably needed to stop working. And it was really funny because my accountant didn't really ask me, well, how much do you spend every year? It was more like, $10 million is a good number, but there was no real thinking behind that. The problem with throwing out numbers like that is it does create fear, and often those numbers are much higher than probably is truly necessary to live a very comfortable life. So that played into my fear of cutting back. That played into my fear of erasing those parts of medicine I didn't like, because I had this big, audacious number in mind, a number that would take decades to reach.
Doc, it's really interesting that you're bringing up the stories you tell yourself about yourself and fear, because I just read this great quote. I'm reading a book called Don't Just Dream About Success, Stack the Odds in Your Favor by Joe Hoyle, who actually was a professor of mine. And in a chapter entitled What Stories Are You Telling Yourself, he describes this quote that he read from Cheryl Strayed in the book Wild. And it said, fear, to a great extent, is born of a story we tell ourselves. And it's amazing that I literally read that last night, and you're describing both of these things. And it is astounding how we can concoct these stories about ourselves just sometimes based on little fleeting moments in our lives. Like, oh, I'm bad at X. I can't be, a singer. Like that's a story I've told myself about myself, is like, I have a terrible voice. I can't sing. And even though that's something that I actually would love to do, honestly, and I'm thinking about, how do I get over that fear? Well, I hire a coach and I see, is that a true story or not? And that's such a tiny, tiny little example, but like, we've concocted these stories about ourselves. And I think fear is a crucial one, and it holds us back. And I'd love to see, where does fear impact you in your life as a high income professional? You've reached FI by any measure, but yet something's holding you back. That's what I see in your writing. So I'd love to hear you explore that.
You know, I don't think it matters how much money you have. I don't think it matters how accomplished you are. We all have fear. I think fear is a part and parcel of our life. And you know, I think it's a mistake to say that fear is always a bad thing. I think fear can be incredibly motivating. I think if I let fear stop me, I would never be able to get up and give a talk about healthcare in front of 10, 15, or 20 people, because I would be too afraid. Because no matter how often I do these things, I still get the fluttering in my chest. So I don't think fear is a bad thing. What you're talking about a lot is limiting beliefs. And so when I look back and tell myself stories about my life, I tend to try to frame myself as the protagonist. So if I can be the protagonist and I can act as the protagonist acts, it helps with things like fear. So when the protagonist in any great movie we watch is faced with fear, what do? They face it, they overcome it, or they forgive themselves if they can't. So when I'm telling those stories about myself, I try to frame myself as the protagonist, and that really, really helps. But to say that fear is going to all of a sudden disappear because I'm financially independent, or fear is going to disappear because I'm successful at work, I think fear is necessary to growth on some levels. And I don't think any of us will ever lose that. Once you have something, you feel you're going to lose it. Or once you make it to one level of the mountaintop, you fear that you won't make it to the next. And I think that's human nature.
So what fear, what limiting beliefs persist for you currently? What are you grappling with now?
So I think a big fear that I grapple with is, am I anyone if I stop becoming a physician? I mean, that's something I think about every day. It's become such a part of my identity, and it was such a part of my purpose for a huge part of my childhood. It was so intertwined in those stories I told about myself. Of course, there's fear about cutting back. There's fear about abandoning that portion and moving on to newer and hopefully, you know, quote unquote, greater things. And I don't think I can overcome that fear by writing about it. I don't think I can overcome that fear even by talking about it. I think on some level, the only way to really overcome that fear is by doing it.
There's a phenomenon out there called, you know, one more year syndrome. You get to enough, you get long past enough, and you just find yourself thinking, well, I can solve the fear with one more year. Do you struggle with that?
Oh, of course. I mean, I struggle with the what ifs just like anyone else. What if the market crashes? What if healthcare becomes incredibly expensive? What if?
What if it becomes expensive? Future tense?
What if it comes even more expensive? What if the money runs out? What if we have sequence of returns that are just abysmal? The problem is the what ifs will eventually stop you because there always is some what if, no matter how unlikely. So it's always going to be there.
What about whole life insurance? That could just fix everything?
You know, now that you mentioned it, I'm going to go out and buy some right now.
You know, we've kind of talked about these fear points. I think all of us, to some degree, when you talk about these fear points, you realize that they exist in your own life and it can has the potential to send you to a dark place. I think all of us would like to back the hero, the protagonist on this. And I'm curious for you, how do you move past these fear points? What does the protagonist do in this situation?
You know, I think it's really important to realize that fear is essential to growth, right? We don't turn the coal into diamonds without pressure. So I don't think fear is a negative thing. I think fear is an actual very motivating feeling. So I think it can bring us and help us move towards greater meaning and purpose. And that's kind of the idea. When I hit these fear points in my career, when I realized that maybe being a physician wasn't my full identity, it really pushed me to go further and think about who I am. And what I came to and realized is that below my profession, below financial independence, there was purpose, identity, and connection out there that I could strive for that, along with being a doctor and along with being financially independent, I could work on myself and work on my own meaning within the world.
So purpose, identity, and connection. That's extraordinarily powerful. But how do you actually think about that? So I always try to put myself in the shoes of someone listening. And this all sounds great, right? Like they're on the path to FI. They're trying to work through the nuts and bolts. At what point would you advise people start thinking, like there's an interplay here, right? People are working full-time and they're trying to get to FI. But I think all of us, certainly on this podcast, would say you need to start thinking about purpose, identity, and connection well before you get to FI, or it's going to be a hollow moment when you reach that 25X or 30X or whatever it is. How do you start thinking about it on a real specific, granular level? I think that's what I'd love to hear from you.
I think it starts by asking yourself what makes your heart sing. I mean, that's really in the end what it's about. I agree with you 100%. If you wait until you're financially independent, if you kind of play that once I have syndrome, once I have X amount of money in the bank, you're going to find that once you get there, the destination is empty and hollow. So ultimately, as opposed to waiting for FI or as opposed to waiting till you reach a certain career path, I think you have to start in the beginning. So for me, I realize one of the things that makes my heart sing is writing. Pursuing writing is something I always put off. I put off because I was in medical school. I put off because I was in residency. I put off because I was building a career and building a nest egg. For me, what made my heart sing, the thing that I wanted to be doing most when I wasn't otherwise busy, was writing. So I could build that into my lifestyle way before I reach financial independence. For other people, it might be travel. For other people, it may be hobbies. I don't know if it matters what it is. The question is, what brings you a sense of purpose and reason to wake up every morning? For other people, it could be family. Once you have that purpose, you can build an identity around that. I like writing. So my identity has somewhat become a blogger. It's become a writer. It's become a guy who goes and gives talks in front of physicians about healthcare. I've been able to take that purpose and build an identity to define who I am around it. And ultimately, that's led me to connection. It's led me to being on podcasts like yours. It's led me to going to national meetings and speaking about medicine. It's led me to going to Camp FI Midwest and meeting someone like Carl. It all ties together. The key is not to wait until you've reached financial independence to start working on all these wonderful life-affirming things. In fact, if you're lucky enough, and if at a young age you figure out what your purpose and identity are, it can actually lead you to financial independence. I love to talk about on my blog, building a perpetual money machine. The idea is that you work really hard, you make money, and then that money can then go into real estate or investments or what have you and start spitting off passive income. Well, let's look at it a different way. What if from day one, you know your purpose, you know your identity, and therefore you find a job or a way to keep yourself busy that produces money that is part of your joy and purpose? You don't need a perpetual money machine then, because you are the perpetual money machine. As long as you're not disabled, as long as you haven't died, you can keep working, because work actually has become a part of your joy. It's become a part of your purpose and identity. And ultimately, that was my plan in becoming a physician. I think over time, I lost some of that as my joy in being a physician changed. And that was some of the disruption of my life, was then going back and saying, okay, now I need to reevaluate what some of my purpose and identity are.
When you were describing there, that sounded like a perfect description of Jonathan, actually, where he has not reached financial independence, but he's taken the tenets of FI, which are finding what you want to do in life, cutting your expenses to the bone so your life doesn't cost that much, and then pursuing what brings you that purpose, identity, and connection, right? Like this podcast, this community. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like you're describing Jonathan, honestly.
Yeah, I think you guys are a perfect example of what financial independence means to our lives. Brad, you were financially independent before you found the podcast, yet the podcast is a big part, I believe, from talking to you of your purpose and identity and meaning. But you were financially independent before that. It took something extra to actually find your way. Jonathan, on the other hand, is not financially independent, and yet he's found a way to build purpose, identity, and connection in his life before financial independence. And this gets me back to the thought that financial independence is important. I think it is a tool we should have in our toolbox, but in a sense, it's a plan B. It's a lever. It's a lever we can pull when plan A isn't going well, but plan A is life. So if you're lucky enough to build a plan A with purpose, identity, and connection, that plan B is like an extra. It's just something out there to protect yourself in case things go wrong.
Doc, you're giving us some amazing quotes here. Plan A is life.
I know. I wrote that down too.
That's what it's all about. And you're right. I mean, when you're describing me, you're right. I had hit financial independence. And I think on some level, I thought I was doing good in the world, helping people with travel rewards. But there was always that piece missing, because what I really enjoy is talking about FI, right? And it's talking about helping people get on this path to saving money and to, frankly, just living a better life. That struck home for me when you're describing it. It's my purpose, identity, and connection. Really, all three of those things come through this podcast. And this podcast didn't exist 24 months ago. So like you said, I had been on the path, I had reached FI, but yet there was this hole, and I found it through this podcast. And I wonder if you have thoughts of how people can find that. I think that's what always is missing for me. So you described for you, it's writing. And I think you probably knew that on some level for many years or decades. So it wasn't like this great epiphany. It was always there. And again, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but how do people who are just living that day-to-day grind and going to work and doing their normal stuff, like, and maybe they don't have that thing that's right there that makes their heart sing, as you described it so eloquently. How do you suggest that people find that purpose?
I think you have to open yourself up to the universe. I think you have to leap before you look. I think you have to take on every new opportunity. I think you have to say yes all the time. I think you have to search for meaning in the small things. I think it's the million little things you do and pay attention to during your day. I can't promise you you'll find your meaning, but I suspect if you pay enough of attention, you'll find things that stoke your excitement. And, you know, I would throw the question right back to you. You know, Brad, how did you find your meaning?
Yeah, that's a great one. I mean, I think clearly it was meeting Jonathan. I mean, just seeing the excitement there. When he pitched me on this idea to start a podcast, it was like opening myself up because I knew instantly, there was no rational thought behind it. I knew instantly that I wanted to do it. And Jonathan's asked me so many times over the last couple of years, like, why did you say yes? You had this great life. You had set up kind of passive income. You were at FI. You have this family.
I have absolutely complicated your life dramatically.
Yes, you've given me a full-time job, but in the best possible way. So yeah, Doc, I mean, that's a great question. I think it is opening yourself up to serendipity and finding what just feels right. To me, again, that was not this rational thought. It wasn't, let's sit down and come up with a pro and con list of doing this podcast with Jonathan. It was just, wow, this sounds exciting. What's the downside? Why wouldn't I try this? This could be amazing. So yeah, I mean, that's what a great question.
Yeah, I mean, you said it perfectly, right? So you had found financial independence, but there was something missing for your meaning and purpose and connection. And so you opened yourself up. And so this guy called you and was really excited. And I've heard you guys describe it before on the podcast. And you said yes. You had no reason to say yes. I guess there was no reason not to say yes. But the point was, you were still somewhat searching. And we talk all the time about limiting beliefs. We limit ourselves all the time by saying it's not worth my time. We limit ourselves all the time by saying that induces fear in me and I don't want to jump into something new. But I think if you are going to truly find your purpose in life, you just have to open up and try new things and talk to new people and put yourself out there and be the big word is vulnerable. You've got to be vulnerable. Vulnerability is one of the things that scares the heck out of us. On the other hand, I would bet that most people will tell you that when they allowed themselves to be ultimately vulnerable, they had some of the most rewarding experiences in their lives.
You know, what you said, Doc, is so important, especially with regards to this idea of just being vulnerable and being willing to open yourself to the universe. I kind of want to go back to maybe talk to potentially a younger audience and use one of these crazy millennial terms, YOLO. You know, you only live once. There's this implication that you need to enjoy every single minute while you're young because you don't know how much time you have. I'm just curious, like for that individual that's maybe not having this reflective look back on purpose, identity, and connection, but in their own minds, they're combating peer pressure and this idea of I need everything now. Do you have any thoughts in regards to that?
Yeah, so I wrote a blog post called YOLO is a no-no. And the reason why is you only live once. Idea is that if you let an opportunity pass you by, it will never come back again. And especially young people allow themselves to be frivolous, to spend a lot of money, and sometimes take risks and chances when it's not necessary. And that's the excuse they give. I look at it a little bit differently. I think we have hundreds and hundreds of new beginnings in our lives. In fact, you know, I'm 45 years old and I'm talking about embarking on a life moving away from being a physician. So even at the age of 45, I'm already thinking about new beginnings. So I think it's a mistake to use YOLO as an excuse to go ahead and be frivolous, especially with your money and especially when you're young. And the reason why is when you're young, that money you have can go a long way if you're smart with it, if you're not frivolous. We all know about the power of compounding. There's not only positive compounding. You put away $10,000 when you're 20, it's going to be worth a heck of a lot more than if you do it when you're 30 or 40. But there's also negative compounding. So all of your debts will continue to compound and can cost you in the long run also. So I think YOLO can be a real issue. Life is long, and I think sometimes young people don't realize that. There's lots of opportunities that happen over the decades.
It's very interesting. As I kind of think back, the summers for kids last forever. But as you get older, it's like every day, every month, every year just blurs by, and you just increasingly wonder what happened. It's not uncommon for that 30 or 40-year-old to say, wow, what happened to the last decade? It's crazy how life becomes a blur. If knowing that the perception of time is not constant, like, does that influence your strategy at all?
Oh, I think it certainly does. So I'm a big fan of front-loading the sacrifice. What that means is, you know, when you're young, you have a huge amount of time and energy, and we have the power of compounding in front of us. So it makes sense to do a lot of that hard work when you're young. If you think about it as a rocket taking off, right, what requires the most energy? Well, that initial fuel for takeoff is a huge part of the energy expenditure of the whole flight. And I think your financial life is the same. If you front load the sacrifice, you create a nice financial base, which can continue to carry you throughout life. It's a funny thing when you're young and you have to do, like when I was a physician and I did an overnight shift when I was in my early 20s, those shifts seem to last forever. So working and sacrificing gave me something that no amount of money could buy. It could make my minutes tick away slowly. As you get older, time flies incredibly quickly. When you're young, you have your whole life in front of you. It is the perfect time to actually put the work in. It will serve you as the years pass. It's one of what I think is the critical points to reaching financial independence early is front-loading the sacrifice when you have the time, when the hours seem to go slower, and when you can use compounding to eventually create your perpetual money machine.
When time is blazing by in your 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond, wouldn't you want to be using that time, that abbreviated, you know, perception of time, towards the activities that bring you the most joy?
And that's certainly what front-loading the sacrifice does. Because once you are at cruising altitude in your 30s and 40s and 50s, you really don't need that much fuel to keep going. There's a lot of momentum, and young people sometimes forget this, that career momentum you build up when you're young is like this huge amount of potential energy. And once you have that potential energy, you can coast. And so, you know, I talk a lot in my blog about downsizing to early retirement or fading to early retirement. I still like working. I still derive some joy from work, so I still do it. But I can downsize. I'm hit that momentum point where I can say all those things I don't like about work, I can just separate and say, I refuse to do them. I can bring my B game to the job. I used to have to bring my A game because I needed to move up in the world. I needed to make more money. Now 80% or 90% is good enough. I can let someone else cover that night shift. I can find ways of creating the most comfortable workspace possible, but I could have never done that if I hadn't front-loaded the sacrifice. I couldn't enjoy my free time. I couldn't enjoy those extra hours that I don't have to work anymore if I hadn't built a strong financial base from the beginning.
So, Doc, from my perspective, from your perspective, I'm almost 40. I think you said you're 45. This front-loading the sacrifice seems perfectly obvious. And it's easy to say from our perspective, but how do you get through to that young doctor who's in their, I don't know, late 20s, early 30s, or not even a doctor, just someone you come across in your writing, your speaking, et cetera, who's in their early 20s, and they have that YOLO perspective. How do you actually describe that to them? Like this front-loading the sacrifice? Like, have you found any tactics, specific tactics that actually work?
I think the best way to do is lay it out financially and show them. So when you have a young person who is bought into that idea of YOLO, you find that they don't realize that by being frivolous now, they're going to actually sacrifice later on in life. So if you can show them that working a little harder, being a little less frivolous now will allow them, in a sense, to be much more frivolous older on in life when they have the money and funds and time to do whatever they want. That sticks. When you can show them that a little sacrifice now will bring decades of happiness, on the other hand, a little bit of YOLO now could bring decades of more sacrifice, people get that.
As I'm asking you that type of question and following up on it, I'm really trying to talk to my younger self. In an episode that we recorded within the last month or so, I was talking about what it would have taken to get my teenage self on board with financial independence. And I think a lot of the conversations that we've had up to this point, I think we've started to build a portfolio that maybe could have convinced that hard-headed individual. But I think you do have to paint a more attractive picture than YOLO. That's basically what it comes down to.
Yeah, you know, I have an allegory I like to tell about financial independence and career. I wrote a post called Three Roads for Three Brothers. And so the idea is this: you have an eldest brother, a middle brother, and a younger brother. And the eldest brother, he hates the road that he has to go on. And so he's just excited to get through that road as fast as possible because he dreams of all the things he can do once he gets to the end of that road. The middle brother, he doesn't like the road too much either, but he's not nearly as strong or determined as the elder brother. So he'll, you know, hike for a few miles and then he'll stop and he'll take a flight of fancy and go off into the fields or go into the mountains. And then he'll come back refreshed and eventually make his way. And then the youngest brother is kind of the strangest of all. The youngest brother goes on his path and he loves to hike and he loves looking at the trees and the cracks in the road. And so he's in no particular hurry. So these brothers take their separate roads over the years. And the eldest brother, he kind of gets there really, really fast, years before his other brothers. And then he goes and does all those things he was excited about doing. But at some point, he finishes all that and feels a little empty and he feels a little lost in his purpose. The middle brother, it takes him a few more years and he gets there. He's not quite as tired as the oldest brother, but he still has some of the same issues with purpose and where he's going. The youngest brother, he gets to the end of the road. He's been taking his sweet time. It's now years later. And what does he do? He looks around, turns back the other way, and starts walking back the way he came. So what is my point with these three stories? There are multiple paths to Phi. There are multiple paths to how you're going to take your career. If you're going to be the first or second brother, you've got to be wary. And the reason why is you get so caught up in your path, you forget to build purpose, identity, and connection into your life. And then once you get there, you feel somewhat lost. If you're going to make the path of the oldest or the middle brother, you've got to not only front load that sacrifice, but build the connection, purpose, and identity. Be open to the world and find what your life is about. And then once you reach the end of the path, you have your perpetual money machine and you need to go live out that purpose. If you're lucky enough to be like the youngest brother, the path itself is your purpose. And therefore, you are your own perpetual money machine and you get to the end of your road and you turn around and walk back the other way because that's what you enjoy most in life. You know, life obviously is not that simple. There are probably hundreds and hundreds of paths. And what I found is, as a physician, I thought I was the youngest brother. And then at some point, I got burned out in medicine. I became the middle brother. I needed some breaks. And as I'm getting to the end of my career, I'm finding that maybe I'm the oldest brother. But in the end, it doesn't matter which path you take. As long as you build purpose and connection and identity from day one, whatever path you take and whether your paths change or you switch roads in the middle, none of it matters. You're going to end up at the same place, which is being happy and contented.
I know from your blog that you work in hospice. So you spend actually a lot of time with people that are approaching that end of life and people and the families that are spending that time with their loved ones as they approach end of life. And I'm curious, does that affect your outlook at all?
Oh, it certainly does. I mean, it's the old saying, no one on their deathbed said, boy, I wish I just worked another week. What do people care about when they're dying? They care about that they fulfilled their purpose. They care about the people who were weaved throughout their lives. They care about the connections they make. And I see that every day. That's part of my job. I see it. I take it to heart. And I think in some ways, our whole community is starting to realize that too. It's important to realize from the beginning what your goals are. And the goal can be financial independence, but it can't be the only goal.
Yeah, Doc, that is incredibly powerful. And it reminds me of the top five wishes of the dying, which I've seen so many times on the internet. And I just called it up here and I'd love to read them. Number one is, I wish I'd had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me. Two is, I wish I hadn't worked so hard. Three, I wish I had the courage to express my feelings. Four, I wish I had stayed in touch with my friends. And five, I wish I had let myself be happier. That has just always struck me as Jonathan says, the chills down your spine type moment. And I'd love to hear your thoughts, especially both personally and as a hospice doctor. I mean, I think you're the perfect person to talk about this.
Yeah, I think those points hit the nail on the head. And I want to infuse some positivism here. one of the wonderful superpowers of this community is it's allowing us to have these conversations before we're lying on the deathbed. A lot of us are young people still, and to have these conversations as young people really will put us in the right mindset of what our purpose is. And I really think it's a positive of this podcast and it's a positive of this community that we can have these conversations. We are ahead of the game just by being in this headspace currently. Most people live their lives and never think deeply about these things. And that's why you end up having these regrets when you're lying on your deathbed.
Yeah, and Doc, just reading through these, you're right. It does remind me so much of the Phi community. I wish I had stayed in touch with my friends. We talk about connection all the time. I wish I hadn't worked so hard. While we certainly aren't anti-job here in the FI community and certainly not at ChooseFI, but we aren't about working that hamster wheel indefinitely until we're 70 years old. It's about finding that purpose, as you're describing. And I mean, so many of these, I wish I'd had the courage to live a life true to myself. And that's what you've described here, is finding what makes your heart sing, right? So these are really, truly amazing. And yeah, I just want to thank you sincerely for coming on. I really personally learned a great deal and I enjoyed hearing your thoughts.
It's been a complete pleasure.
All right. Well, there is an additional positive to this particular episode because we're going to get the chance to let Doc G tackle the hot seat. Doc G, are you ready for this?
Yes, I am.
In a world drowning in debt and rampant consumption, trapped by the chains of lifestyle inflation, these questions highlight the secrets of those who have broken free. Welcome to the Choose FI Hot Seat.
All right, Doc, question number one, your favorite blog that's not your own.
So I am a big fan of accidentalfire.com. We both started blogging at about the same time, and I cursed the day he started blogging because he took what I thought was the best title for a blog. But not only that, he happens to have killer content. He does a lot of cool stuff with mapping, like he'll do mapping of the mean income or car prices or gas prices, and he'll come up with some really cool, interesting conclusions. In between there, he throws in some humor. He does a number of book reviews, just a lot of really good content.
He stole your domain name, son of a gun.
Totally.
All right, question number two, your favorite article of all time.
So I would have to go with the White Coat Investor. He wrote an article that really changed things for me. It was called 150 Portfolios That Are Better Than Yours. And why this kind of changed me is I had always thought investing was such a black box. I mean, I had a financial advisor and I barely understood what he was doing. And I read Jim's article and I realized that there was a simple, better way to do it. Now, the truth of the matter is I eventually went to other places for exact information and advice like J.L. Collins or Millennial Revolution. I took a look at their stock series. But just the idea that investing could be simple, it blew my mind to read that article.
That's awesome. Question number three, your favorite life hack.
So based on our previous conversation, writing to me is a big life hack, but I have to tell you deep down inside, my true life hack is I think that every person needs a theme song. The reason why is I think we all have immense power inside of ourselves. The problem is getting into the zone and tapping into that power is difficult. But I think if you have a theme song, a chant, a prayer, a poem, whatever it is that takes you to that place, it allows you to touch your power source. And when you do that, you can create and do great things.
Well, you know I'm going to follow up on that. What is your theme song?
So when I was a kid, I heard a song called Theme from the Underdog by a kind of reggae rap group from the 1980s called Third World. And I have to tell you, that song has been there for me in difficult times, in great times also. It's the one thing that just kind of centers me.
Brad, do you have a theme song?
this is fascinating though. I've never thought about this, but Okay, Doc, talk me through this. Like, again, this seems like one that has been with you for a while, but have you mentioned this theme song thing before in any of your speeches or described how people can find them? Is it just a song that exists?
So I did write about this in one blog post a long time ago, but I think it can be any of that. The question is, what taps into your inner power? We all know it when you're listening to a song on the radio and you get that tingly feeling, or when you write something and you look down and you say, now that's the best thing I ever wrote. Whatever it is that helps you channel your inner power. For me, it was this rap reggae chant slash song that just, it held so much power. It was all about being the underdog and being misunderstood and yet accomplishing things anyway. And it was just so powerful.
All right, Brad, well, we're going to find you a theme song and we're going to get that set up for a future episode. We're going to play it.
Well, no, I mean, music is really important to me. It's interesting that, yeah, I've never thought on that level, Doc, but I'm going to put some real thought into this. That's incredibly interesting to me. So thank you very much.
Sure.
All right, let's go with question number four, your biggest financial mistake.
So I have been really lucky. I have not had a huge number of financial mistakes, but I kick myself because when I finished residency, I moved to where I live currently and I bought this kind of big expensive house. If I could do it again, I would have bought a 3-flat and house hacked and lived in one of the units and rented out the other two. I came to real estate later on in life, but I think that would have been the quickest, best way to get into real estate, which is an asset class I do believe in.
All right. And we actually spent a little bit of this episode talking about, I think, question number five. But question number five, advice you would give to your younger self?
I think hands down, my best advice would be that you need to manage your own money. I spent decades being afraid to understand money. I spent decades being afraid to understand investments. It was only after I found financial independence, found this community, and really started reading the books and the blogs that I got a hold of my money. And no one will manage your money as well as you do. And so I think that's a very important thing that I did wrong.
You talked earlier, I believe, about having a financial advisor. You mentioned fleetingly. Did you get rid of said financial advisor? Like, are you fully in charge of your money as of today?
So I did. I eventually fired my financial advisor. You know, my wife started her 401k like 15 years ago, and it was about the same time I started working with a financial advisor. And the way my wife did her 401k is she went to her company website, they asked a series of questions, and it pretty much told her what asset allocation she should have. So she went and blindly put all of her money in that asset allocation, and then I, you know, had an AUM fee and had an advisor who's managing the rest of our money for the 15 years. So when I compared returns at the end of 15 years, my wife's 401k came out about 1-2% ahead of my financial advisor. So that was all the proof I needed. As I've read more and philosophically, I now realize that it was just something I should have been doing in the end anyway. But that really was the proof for me.
Wow, that's fascinating to see that horse race. So many of us think about this conceptually, but you don't actually see the horse race. So that's really neat.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
All right, now we do have a bonus question for you. Over the past year, what purchase have you made that's brought the most value to your life?
Okay, so this is really easy. I spent $400 on a ticket to go to Camp Fi Midwest, and it was the greatest weekend. I met so many cool, interesting people. It was life-changing. I came back from that weekend feeling supported, feeling much more in touch with my feelings about where I was going with my career, and feeling like I made a bunch of really cool friends. And I can't speak enough about the experience. It was really great.
You know, we talked a second ago about purpose, identity, connection. Could you maybe tie a thread from that to your Camp Fi experience?
Certainly. I have been struggling, as we've kind of talked about a little bit, with my career and identity as a physician versus my transition into more financial independence and pursuing other things like writing. A number of the people I talked to, and even a number of the talks at Camp Fi Midwest, talked about exactly this, talked about fears and what we fear about leaving our jobs, and talked about purpose and identity and just the support I got. I was able to stand up in front of a group of people and say, I am struggling with this. And they were there to support me and say, we hear you. And maybe they didn't solve every problem. In a sense, I have to solve my own problems. I have to think through this myself. But knowing I had these group of people behind me that had either experienced some of this or were willing to listen and to be a shoulder to lean on was just so, so powerful.
Thank you so much for sharing that with our community. I think there's a lot of people that went to Camp Fi this past year, but a lot more that are planning on going in the future. And certainly that review or testimony, if you will be beneficial for them. But even more than that, thank you for being willing to come on the show and share so much great insight. It's been incredibly valuable.
Oh, thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun.
All right. If you got as much value from this episode as I did, and you want to find out more about what Doc G is working on and connect with him and read or listen to his content further, you can find him at diversify.com, diversify.com. And he just recently started a podcast with our friend Paul Thompson, who we actually met at Camp Fi. They just recently started a podcast and they're doing panel discussions with people from the financial independence community. And they're having their guest weigh in on questions that don't have clear answers to help refine your path to Fi. The name of the podcast is What's Up Next, and I've been very impressed with both the quality and the content thus far. I think it'll be an excellent use of your time, and I'm sure they would appreciate you stopping by and saying hi. You know, Brad, this episode is the ultimate answer to what advice would you give your younger self? You know, top five wishes of the dying. For the Fi community, that's not a morbid statement. This is an opportunity. You've positioned yourself to be willing and open to this information and take action on it. And this is the best gift that you could get, is to take action on these ideas and principles. And I just so appreciated Doc G kind of laying out a framework for that.
Yeah, what an interesting thought and perspective, Jonathan. I like that a lot about what would you tell your younger self? You're right. This is the philosophy that I would hope to tell my younger self. And yeah, just to put a bow on it, that identity purpose connection, that is so crucial. And I suspect that'll be something that's added to our vernacular here at Choose a Fi for sure, because it's that powerful.
All right, my friends, if you've got value from this episode, if you've been getting value from the episodes up to this point, just take 1 second and press the subscribe button on the platform you're listening to this on. Just lets the providers know you're getting value from the show and you want to be here when we produce additional content. If you want to support us in what we're doing here at Choose Fi, here are 4 easy ways. 1, leave us an iTunes review. To do that, just go to choosefi.com/iTunes. 2, use our page to sign up for travel credit cards. If you want to travel the world with miles and points instead of your hard-earned dollars, then just go to choosefi.com/cards and get started today. 3, if you're working on the milestones of Fi, set up a personal capital account to track your progress and use our affiliate link. It's completely free, and just go to choosefi.com/PC. P as in Paul, C as in cat. And 4, and most importantly, find your friends, coworkers, and family members who might be open to this message and tell them about the podcast. Have them start with episode 100. It is a fantastic starting place. All right, my friends, the fire is spreading. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
You've been listening to Choose FI Radio Podcast, where we help middle-class America build wealth one life hack at a time.